And welcome on in. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Rider Than You. A very happy 4th of July. Thank you for spending some of the holiday weekend with us right here on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm very excited to talk to this next man we have on the guest line right now. Trey Wallace has an outstanding job covering all college sports, but especially college football for OutKick. And now that we're at July 4th, right, this is the last holiday before college football starts. Now I feel like you really start turning your attention, revving those engines for a big 2025 season to start. So much to talk with Trey. Trey, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here on this holiday weekend. How are you, man?
Man, I am good. I'm good. I'm on the tail end of my one break that I take per year, and then it all starts, man. It's nonstop until 2026, and we're inching closer, man. We got media day starting a week from Monday. The SEC will start, then you got the Big Ten, and then you're gonna have the Big 12. So I think we finally made it. If we can get through the next week, brother, we're all set to go.
I know. We finally are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel here when it's enough off-season talk and now actual football conversations can be had. Right. And that's what I'm excited to talk to with you about, Trey, because right, we're still right now in the time of just like predictions and expectations. And I feel like recently, because there's so much anticipation for Arch Manning, it's been 2 years since he sat behind Quinn Ewers. There's so much excitement because of the name and what he brought to Texas as a five-star recruit. And I've also, because of that excitement in waiting for 2 years, right, I feel like there's been a lot of hyperbole now that we finally get to see Arch and talk about expectations for him at Texas just in 2025. You're a very reasonable man, Trey. What can fans expect from Arch this season, at least just in 2025 here as a first-time starter for Texas?
I mean, I think that some of the talk has gotten a little bit out of control when it comes to Arch and what he can be at Texas. Do I think he can be a good quarterback? Absolutely. I think I heard Paul Feinbaum the other day be the greatest quarterback since Tim Tebow. I was like, wait a minute. Come on, man. Do you know how many good quarterbacks we've had in 24, 25 years? I think, look. The most interesting part of all of this is that, sure, Arch Manning is what started two games while he was at Texas and against opponents the Longhorns could take care of. Maybe one of us could have been handing the ball off. But you look at what we're getting the opening weekend. And I don't want folks to go, I know they are, but I'm trying to give a disclaimer. Don't go overboard by what happens in Columbus. They are shooting Arch Manning right out of the cannon the season in Columbus against the Ohio State Buckeyes to start the year. And then you kind of look at the rest of that month and they play San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston before having to go to Florida. I think, look, Arch Manning is going to be, I think, a very good leader for this football team. I think he's going to be, if Texas can, they have built around him, but if they can get the ball down the field and establish a running game, this offense is going to be very tough to stop. I think he has all the tools and the mechanics, but I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say, okay, this is going to be the first pick in the 2026 draft because of what we've seen in two games and what people are seeing on the practice field and in throwing sessions. I think the young man is going to be able to get Texas to the playoffs and potentially fight for a national championship here. But some of these takes that I've seen recently, it's like, man, okay, we can predict this all we want, but we don't know what we're going to get really until that first game of the year where he steps on the field against that Ohio State defense. We're like, okay, let's see if he can get the ball 20 yards down the field without getting two guys in his face on a pass rush. So what I'm getting at is here, I wish folks would kind of temper things down a little bit, but unfortunately, it's Arch Manning. It's Texas. We've been waiting for this moment for 2 years. I get it. But at the same time, I don't really think we're going to find out against Ohio State. I really think we find out what Arch Manning is October 4th at Florida in Gainesville. That's when we'll see if he's really made the progression into being the guy at Texas and in the SEC.
I like that date, Trey, right? Not getting all wrapped up in the first game of the year and making all these declarations of he's the best quarterback ever or this guy sucks, he's overhyped, based on what we see in Columbus week number one. As we're talking to Trey Wallace, who does a great job covering college football for OutKick, I like the month into the season kind of circling that Florida game, in part because I wonder about this, Trey. I don't think it's talked about enough, right? Everything Arch Manning has done, starting with the recruiting to sitting behind Quinn Ewers for 2 years without saying a word to not signing any NIL deal his freshman year on purpose, like, right? The Manning family has intentionally gone about taking this as a marathon, not a sprint when it comes to Arch's development, with the sole focus, right, eventually of making him as prepared as he could be to get to the NFL. And so I wonder, because I don't think it's talked about enough, I would be surprised, no matter how this year goes, Trey, if he's actually entering the draft next year. I could see the Manning family saying, look, you're going to make all the money in Texas. Like, there's no reason to rush. The NFL will be there. No matter how this year goes, I could see him coming back and getting 2 years experience as a starter at Texas before going to what would be, I guess, the 2027 draft. And I bring that up because, look, Steve Sarkisian, right, there's a lot of pressure on every coach to win every single game. I get that. But I wonder, like, if the Manning, let's just say the Manning family has communicated out of, hey, Arch, this is a 2 year starter, you know, job for us. We don't see him going just being one and done. Do you think that, I don't say Sark holds things back, but the development is a little bit slower because you know you have a longer runway of 2 years. And you look at Texas, right? They lost a lot from last year's team that went to the Final Four. A lot of great players are in the draft. So there's a lot of unproven talent on that offense, on the offensive line, you know, at tight end. Do you, could you see a situation where for a while maybe Sark kind of takes it easy, eases him into it, and maybe we don't see Arch truly, you know, unleashed, if you will, till like maybe the back half of the year? Is that something that crossed your brain at all, Trey?
I do, and I'll give you a reason why. Like, I could see that September 20th game against Sam Houston being the game of like, all right, Arch, go out there and try to sling it. Throw the ball 40 times, you know, whatever. I don't think, this is my personal opinion, and I've spoken with some folks about this down in Texas, across the conference, across college football. I don't think Arch Manning is just going to be a one-year starter in college football and then dip out. I think he's going to do 2 years. I think that, you know, he'll get his degree in his third year, probably at the end of next year. But I do think at the same time, it means something to the family. It means something to him. Arch Manning, just a different breed, guys. You know, and if you followed his uncles, and if you listen to his father, you know, speak about this, and even his grandfather, they've had a plan for Texas. Now, look, would it have been a little bit easier if Quinn Ewers would not have been to Texas next year? Like, would this have been it? 2 years and gone? Probably. But I don't see Arch Manning just coming in, no matter what he does. Let's just say Arch goes and wins the Heisman Trophy. Man, I even hate saying that. Whatever. This season. I really do. But do we really think that we're just going to get one season in a Longhorns uniform as the starting quarterback for Arch Manning? I just don't see it. I think that Arch Manning, he's comfortable with the money that he's going to be making this year. My goodness, he is going to be making some money this year on NIL.
Oh, yeah.
And especially revenue sharing with Texas. But then you throw in the factor that, okay, let's say he has a good year. Let's say they make the playoffs but don't win a national championship. Arch is going to want to run it back. And I think what Texas is building right now, even with this recruiting class, so you give these guys, you know, these freshmen that are coming in, give them another year, you know, to get ready. I just feel like, you know, Quinn Ewers was someone that probably could have transferred before last season, mm-hmm. and made a good amount of money. He probably could have done it this year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and been playing for a school. Right, exactly. And it made $6 million. I just think Arch and them are playing the long game here. There's no reason to rush it. You know, pray to God he doesn't get hurt or anything like that, knock on wood. But at the same time, I just don't see this being a quote one and done type of season. And a lot of people be like, oh, well, he's been there 3 years. Well, okay, he's been the starter for technically one besides two games. So let's just take it slow here. And I know there are a lot of NFL teams. I talked to an NFL quarterback coach the other day. They're looking at Arch Manning for 2026. And I told him, okay, well, cool. Well, if he decides to come back and play at Texas, it really throws things in for a little bit of a wrinkle here.
Right.
And he agreed with me. So I think this is going to be, in my personal opinion, this is not going to be the only season that we see Arch Manning lining up as quarterback in Texas.
Agreed. I agree. I think it does, like, again, if you're Sark and you kind of know that, maybe changes, especially that week one game at Ohio State, for example, maybe how you coach it and you take it a little bit more developmental, slower than just throwing them, cutting them loose in Columbus, say, right, go Arch, go, you know, sink or swim sort of thing here for us in your one big year in Austin. It's definitely, yeah, I'm with you, Trey. I don't think it gets enough attention or talked about enough, at least going into 2025 for sure, that it could be longer than just a one-year stay. We are talking to Trey Wallace. Outstanding job for OutKick covering college football. Make sure you follow Trey on Twitter at TreyWallace_. Sticking in the SEC, Trey, a few weeks ago, right, we heard Thomas Castellanos say these, I think, ridiculous comments about how, hey, Nick Saban's gone, Alabama can't stop me. Forget that, because I think he's going to have a rough game week number one. But I think, right, it does speak to a larger viewpoint of how other people in college football view Kalen DeBoer. When you look at his, you know, basically his situation trying to live up to or continue a Nick Saban build, would you say DeBoer has the most pressure on him in 2025? Is there another coach you're kind of looking at in terms of the pressure meter that's higher right now than Alabama's head coach?
I mean, I think overall, look, this always goes back to the old phrase, and I'm going to screw it up, but that's okay. It's, you know, you never follow the legend. You follow the guy that gets fired after the legend.
Right.
And I think that, but here's the thing about Kellen DeBoer. He's figuring it out in Tuscaloosa. He wasn't going to figure it all out in 1 year. I mean, this guy is from the Northwest, man. Like, let's be honest here, okay? He comes from Washington. When you're thrown in, look, I'm from the state of Alabama. I was born and raised in Mobile. I know how crazy that darn state is when it comes to football. And I understand what Kellen DeBoer is going through right now. Like, everybody's so surprised, all of a sudden, Alabama's been good at recruiting, you know, this year. Like,
right.
Oh my gosh, wait a minute. Nick Saban's not there, but Kellen DeBoer's doing this? Well, okay, it's not like Alabama went anywhere. They just traded coaches. Nick Saban retired. He's still around. He's still at the facility every now and then. He's still got a house in Tuscaloosa. What I'm getting at is it feels like Kellen DeBoer is finally getting out of that shadow a little bit. It wasn't going to happen last year. This is the year it could happen. But he's got to win. And I think that, and that's an obvious answer, but he's got to go out there and win 9 games this year. He's got to be in playoff contention come the first week of November. I'm not saying they're firing or anything.
Right.
I'm talking about the base. I'm talking about the folks in Alabama. Like, they can't lose the momentum of what Nick Saban had, because last season it was them arguing to be in the 12-team playoff, but they were arguing against South Carolina and Ole Miss for that 12th spot. This year, I think that when he brought in Ryan Grubb, if everybody remembers, Ryan Grubb as OC was pretty much the OC for 2 days before he went to the Seahawks.
Right.
But you look at it now, and I think that what they have done last year in recruiting, sure, they didn't kill it. But you look at it now, I think there's this change that's starting to happen in Tuscaloosa. Do I think he can figure it out? I do. I'm just always a little bit curious and skeptical about how much buy-in there is from Alabama fans with Kellen DeBoer. It's almost like, you know, it's more moratorium. Like, they're sitting around, they're still grieving that Nick Saban is not their head coach. I think that the expectations right now for Kellen DeBoer, obviously, you want to be a playoff team. You want to be fighting for that playoff spot first come November. But at the same time, I think the quarterback situation is a little bit iffy for me with Alabama, but I think they've got it on the defensive line. I think they've got it on the offensive line. Linebackers, I'm satisfied with Alabama. I think secondary is that one's going to be interesting to me. Wide receiver, you already know. So this is one of those years where it's not make or break. It's just you got to continue going in the right direction after Nick Saban. You can't have another loss to Vanderbilt. You know, Alabama was made fun of all last season because they lost to Diego Pavi and Vanderbilt in Nashville. Like, you can't have that type of loss. I mean, we're not talking about Auburn here.
Right.
You know, we're talking about Alabama. Hugh Freeze is a whole different situation where I think this is his last shot at Auburn this season.
Agreed.
But overall, I think Kellen DeBoer can get the job done. People have just got to be understanding that he's doing it a different way over there, man. And the folks inside that building, they get it. But does the base and the donors get it? I think he's got enough talent, Ryan, to make a playoff run here, you know. But at the end of the day, is Ty Simpson going to be the quarterback that's going to lead you to a national championship or be in contention? I don't see it. I'm just being honest with you with Ty Simpson and somebody that has known Ty Simpson and watched him progress as a backup at Alabama. But to me, it's going to be fascinating is how they figure out this offense, because they can't have it. You know, Jalen Milroe's gone. You know, he's not going to bail you out 20 yards down the field with a run. So how does this offense build around with Ryan Grubb there? To me, that's going to be the biggest telling point.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I don't think Ty Simpson is going to be Jake Coker, let's say 2.0 here, a decade.
Oh, my gosh. You brought up Jake Coker. My goodness. Wow. You went back. This is not an A.J. McCarron type situation.
Oh, no.
This is
Bad guy here, Trey, but why Jake Coker sticks out? Because I was so mad. I'm like, this guy's not good, and he's going to win a national title. Damn you, Nick Saban. So it's crazy for Jake. I remember his name, not because of he's not won a national title. I was going, I hate this guy growing up.
Right. No, it's Jake Coker. It's crazy. He went to my little brother's high school, actually. So I've known about Jake Coker for a while. And then when he leads Alabama, it's like, oh, my God. It's like, okay, is Ty Simpson going to be that guy? No, I don't think he's going to be that guy. But I think, you know, I think we can end up seeing two quarterbacks at Alabama this season. So I don't know what Castellanos was doing by running his mouth like that. God bless him. Like, if he wants to think like that and give some hype to Florida State, like, whatever, dude, go at it. But don't act like you were running the ACC last year at Boston College and all that nonsense. And Godspeed at Florida State, because if they didn't fix some things around him, he's going to be hit about every other down.
Godspeed. Right, for sure. We're talking to Trey Wallace with an outstanding job covering college football for Outkick. We're one. It's Ryan Hickey in for Bill Ryder right here on Ryder Than You. I want to finish the conversation with this, Trey. We talked a lot on the field, which is always great, but obviously college football is still in this point, still a lot of off the field noise and questions. So I want to ask you this, since now we're 4 days into this new era where schools can legally, for the first time, pay players revenue sharing. How does this change recruiting? Like, how does this change college football going forward now that we kind of finally have truly above the board a salary cap, if you will, in terms of schools being only allowed to give a certain amount of money? We're having a cap for all sports. How does this change this new ruling, change kind of, especially college football recruiting going forward? Does it promote parity in your mind?
Oh, man, it's crazy to think 4.5 years ago, I hope my timeline's right, you know, Nick Saban pops off at the mouth at Birmingham at Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher calls a press conference, out the name Sliced Bread when NIL, the inception. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, look at us. You know, schools are now paying athletes. It's like, how the hell did we get here so quick? Like, what in the world happened? Parity is going to be very interesting because I'm curious to see how many teams keep it above board. And if folks don't know what we're talking about, revenue sharing wise, schools, college football programs, mega programs are going to pay about $16, $17 million to athletes per year. Now, that's just from the school. We're not talking about the NIL deals that the players get. So really a roster is going to be around a $35 to $40 million roster. I think to me, it's going to be interesting with this NIL stuff. Any NIL deal that is over $600 has to be turned into a clearinghouse, which is really just a computer program. And then about five different people that are going to approve or deny a deal. Okay. You know how many deals that are under $600 go down the NIL? Not many, unless it's a local hot dog stand in your college town. So the scrutiny is going to be there. Here's what I think is going to happen. You're going to have these third-party NIL collectives out there. They're going to be the ones that are, quote-unquote, funneling the money to the players. I think the school is, you know, your starting quarterback, let's just say, at Alabama. Okay, let's just go with Alabama again. Ty Simpson, if he was that all-star quarterback, or even Texas, we could say Texas. Like, Arch Manning would probably get $3 million, I would say, from the Texas revenue-sharing cap. You know, pot that they have. And then you got to think that down. Okay, well, the rest of that money is coming from NIL deals. He's either set up or the third party set up. And where I'm talking about the third party are these NIL collectives that are still hanging around because they got to find a way to funnel the money. Like, are we going to really act like the boosters in the background that have been paying these athletes now for decades just going away? No, they're just going to find different ways to do it. Like, they're going to give money. You know, one booster is going to give $2 million to some local business, and then that local business is going to go out and hire a couple of these players to do deals, and that's where the $2 million is going to go. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's just going to be different ways of funding. So above board is very interesting to me because, sure, it might look like it on paper. It might say, okay, every school's got $17 million out of the rev share for football, and then, you know, $2 to $3 million for basketball and so on. I'll be fascinated to see if this tampers things down a little bit because I don't think it will. I think you're going to still see some very interesting NIL deals that to me play in the hands of the athletes, which it should, by the way.
Right.
But at the same time, how many people are going to test those boundaries? Okay. Like, how many people are going to have the donors they're going to give to the local gas station? Local gas station then going to turn around and hand out $2-3 million. That's where I'm getting at here. So they can try, you know, but again, you know, I don't think we're going back to the days of hotel parking lot meetups, you know, to drop off bags of cash or something just sitting on the back doorstep of a house. But I still think that we're going to see those big donors and boosters. They're going to play a big part of this, and they have to, because universities can't afford all of this by themselves. So you know, above board is very interesting to me. And, you know, I think like Auburn's coach, Hugh Freeze, said something the other day. Oh, well, we're still trying to navigate NIL, and we might not have the money that other schools have, but we're going to do it the right way. Come on, man. Stop. You're saying this because you're broke right now, in a sense, and you don't have the booster money, not the NIL, the revenue share money that we got from the House settlement. So to me, man, this one is going to be interesting. I'll give you a date. August 1st is a date to keep in mind. And August 1st is the date where schools can start giving out formal written NIL offers to recruits that are coming in, that will either sign in, you know, this upcoming season in 2025 in December, or right after the other signing day in 2026. So you're going to start seeing a lot of money being discussed August 1st because they can formally give them an NIL offer per se, and it can be written in paper. So that's when we're going to find out really how much money these boosters and them are planning on spending.
Be very, very interesting, Trey. Make a good point. Yeah, these boosters for decades have been used to illegally finding ways to give money. I don't think they're going to just now all of a sudden pretend to play by the rules and and start being above board completely, for sure. Again, Trey is amazing. Make sure if you haven't already, you're not familiar with his work, consume it on OutKick. Follow Trey on Twitter, TreyWallace_. Trey, thank you so much for the time. It's been a lot of fun here, and especially on a holiday weekend, man. Enjoy the rest of it before it kicks into gear.
Oh, we're getting close, man. We're going to get close. Got one more week, and then it's nonstop, buddy. So I appreciate you having me, Ryan. Have a wonderful 4th of July weekend, and look forward to talking college ball down the road.
Likewise, Trey. Appreciate you, dude. Enjoy it. Thank you again. And Trey's right. We are going in the fast lane here. Cannot wait for college football to start very, very soon. All right, when we return, it's Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Righter Than You. We got buy or sell, including a question, whether it's mandatory on July 4th. To eat a hot dog. We'll discuss that next. It's Ryan Hickey right here. Righter Than You.
You're listening to Righter Than You.
I already forgot it. All the Good Men?
What'd you say?
What is it called? All the Good Men?
Try it again.
All of the Men? All Good Men?
A few good men. You're not one of them. And you're not one of them. You're not one of them right now in this exact moment in reality.
It's Righter Than You with Bill Righter.
It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill. Yep, that's what you're kind of dealing with right there, the lack of culture from your boy. Although I have seen a few good men, I just could not remember the name at that point. But we're at least one classic movie checked off the box. You Can't Handle the Truth. Great movie. This NASCAR race preview is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. This Sunday sees NASCAR head to the Great Lakes for the Grant Park 165. The Chicago Street Race will feature 16 drivers trying to stay alive for the $1 million in-season challenge prize. The man to beat this weekend, Shane Van Ginsbergen, who won a road course race early this season in Mexico City.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Righter Than You.
So it is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on Righter Than You. A happy 4th of July. Filling in for me producing today is Evan Harkin. Evan, what's going on, dude?
Nothing much. Doing good.
Good, good. What we got today for Buy or Sell?
Big story of the day. Guardians pitcher Luis Ortiz is accused of illegal gambling participation and being investigated. Buy or sell. Players should be allowed to bet on sports that they don't play in.
Sell. Sell.
Sell.
I think this is a slippery slope to where, like, if you allow baseball players to bet on basketball, again, once you open the door, I think you're just inviting, well, okay, we're betting on basketball. Hey, you know what's crazy, Joey? Like, I'm pitching next month, maybe. Like, how crazy would it be if I just said ball two? Like, I could control it. And if you put a lot of money on ball two, all of a sudden, you know, you can make a lot of money here. I could control that for it. Maybe we'll split it 50-50 and make some side money. I think it's a very slippery slope where you're asking for danger if you allow other players, or I should say athletes, to bet on even other sports. Sports have to protect integrity first and foremost. As soon as it comes into question, you lose fans. I would make sure the integrity is protected as much as I possibly can, which would mean no gambling for any athlete on any sport.
The Knicks finally hired their replacement for Tom Thibodeau and former Kings, Lakers, and Cavs head coach Mike Brown. Brown has nearly won 60% of his regular season games and has the third highest win percentage among active head coaches that have coached at least two seasons. Brown made the NBA Finals back in 2007 and has made the conference finals twice. Buy or sell, Knicks are the favorites to win the East after hiring Mike Brown.
I'm going to say buy, Evan. And this has nothing to do with the Mike Brown hiring. I don't like the Mike Brown hiring. Full disclosure, I'm a Knicks fan. I said yuck was the tweet when I first heard this news. But the reason why, despite that, I'm still saying they're the favorites is because I just don't have faith in anyone else. The Cavs are the better team, right? They won the East last year in terms of regular season and the most wins in the conference. I don't trust them come playoff time. I don't trust Donovan Mitchell. I don't think he's a playoff caliber player that rises to the moment. I don't think he's efficient enough. We saw this Cavs team. I don't hear about them being banged up in round two. They got worked by the Pacers. Worked. I don't trust him. So even though I'm not a big Karl Anthony Towns guy and I have major questions about him consistently showing up in the playoffs and the Knicks defense really down the stretch folded, you look at Boston, they're hurt. No Jason Tatum next year. You look at the Pacers, no Tyrese Haliburton and now no Miles Turner. They're going to, I think, take a step back. The Pistons and the Magic are up and coming, and Bill's right. A lot on the show has talked about the moves they made and the excitement around them. I think there's real buy in there, but they're also unproven in the playoffs. I'm going to say buy. I think the Knicks are the team to beat in the East, but it is more by default than me truly believing this is a championship caliber roster.
Omar Khan and the Steelers agreed to a 3-year extension. Buy or sell, Steelers will win a playoff game within the next 3 years.
Sell, Evan.
Sell.
I don't see it. In part because, like, where's the optimism? I think they're going to have a terrible year. And honestly, I think if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you should root for a terrible year this year. Get a bad draft pick, try to get as high as you can, and in what should be a loaded 2026 quarterback class, finally try to draft a guy that can actually be the replacement for Ben Roethlisberger. But the thing for the Steelers is, outside of quarterback, like, they have other issues. You know, their offensive line is not very strong. Their running game is very weak. That defense is expensive and old. And so you have a lot of money tied up into older veteran players that you're going to have to turn around. Can you rebuild the defense? Like, the Rams, I think, don't get enough credit for what they did after they won a Super Bowl, had an older defense, took one down year, and rebuilt that defense where they're now one of the youngest defenses in the league, but also really damn good. They did a great job drafting and developing. I don't have that same confidence in Omar Khan and the Steelers that I do in the Rams to not only draft and develop, you know, we're talking 5, 6, 7 players on the defensive side of the ball over the next 2 or 3 years. I don't trust them to get the quarterback right and figure this out to where we're talking about the Steelers actually truly winning a playoff game. So I can't see it happening in the next 3 years, Evan. No way.
President Trump said yesterday he wants to host a UFC event on the White House grounds on July 4th, 2026 to help celebrate America's 250th birthday. Trump said he hopes to have 20,000 to 25,000 people attend. Buy or sell, you are intrigued by this idea.
I'm going to say buy.
Buy.
But I will. I just don't know. Like, for me, like, I'm not a big UFC fan. So it has to be like a great environment or like a big fight in order to watch. If you're telling me next July 4th is going to be a big UFC fight with some big names at the White House, will I watch? Probably. But, like, for me, like, half of my intrigue is the crowd. Like, if you get a juiced up crowd that, you know, the fighters feed off of, but it's like in any sport, really. Like, if you know, you could see sometimes the crowd just being so good and so hostile and so intense that even if you're not a fan of a team or a sport, you're drawn in because the energy comes through your TV. That's, for me, like, what partly like USC has to do to get me at least intrigued. I just don't know how that's possible. I don't know how you're building some sort of venue to where you're going to have 20 or 25,000 people. So I say that because if we're talking about a little, you know, venue on the lawn and maybe get 1,000 people there, you're not going to have the same juice as you would as a sold out arena. And for me, the lack of juice from the crowd does wane some of my intrigue. But overall, would I be intrigued by this? Yes. But you have to check a lot of boxes, I think, for this to go well. And I don't know when it's all said and done if we're going to see it or if it'll be, you know, everything maybe we think it could be.
Chuck E. Cheese is opening up an adult arcade to try to lure back adults that grew up going. Buy or sell, you would attend an adult Chuck E. Cheese.
I'm going to buy this because I'm going to assume, right, if it's an adult Chuck E. Cheese, you're going to have drinks there and some arcade games, you know, air hockey, throwing the ball through the hoop. Whatever, a lot of these games. I think if you do it right, it could be a lot of fun. Now, I'm going to maybe age myself here at 31. Evan, you just graduated college?
Yes.
Have you ever been to a Chuck E. Cheese before?
Of course.
Oh, okay. I know they've died out quickly, so I wasn't sure if it was like, you know, after I kind of aged out of that phase, like 10, 11, 12, if the generation behind me, which now I guess being almost 10 years apart, that I guess you are now the next generation, if you guys still did Chuck E. Cheese. Okay, that's good to know. I was worried it's going to really feel old here. Would you be intrigued if we're talking about an adult Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, it's basically Dave and Buster's, but you assume maybe less kids because Dave and Buster's is kind of more family-oriented. If it's, hey, the fellas going out, we're going to Chuck E. Cheese, we're going to get a few beers and have some competitions, I'm in. That could be, Chuck E. Cheese could be back. It could be back. Just please leave the pizza in the past. Oh.
Buy or sell, it's mandatory to have a hot dog on the 4th of July.
Sell.
Sell.
I'm not a hot dog guy. I don't find the appeal. I think it is overrated in terms of how people talk about it being Americana and you got to have one. I'm a burger guy. And I think burgers are American as well. You can get away with having a cheeseburger at a barbecue, but I don't know. If you go to a barbecue today, I'm going to the beach later today, so am I going to have a hot dog at the beach? No. Am I going to, I feel guilty that I'm being a bad American for having a hot dog or not having a hot dog? Hell no. Gordon, are you going to have a hot dog today?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one burger, two dogs. That's my go-to. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is it un-American in your mind if someone does not have a hot dog on July 4th?
Un-American is a bit strong. I don't know if it's un-American.
Okay.
But yeah, if you have an option of a hamburger, you're not going to have two hamburgers, right?
Oh, I'm a two-burger guy.
Oh, no, that's too much. Too much burger.
Really?
Yeah, I like the variety of the two dogs. And if I'm going back for like, you know, a couple hours go by, you want a little something else. Hot dogs are very, very versatile. You can throw it on the grill. It could be cold. You throw it back on the grill.
I think hot dogs and hamburgers are in the same category. If you don't eat it like right off the grill, ugh, no thank you. I don't want to reheat it.
Well, I'm just saying like after, you know, you might have a couple of adult beverages. You want a little nosh, you know. The taste buds are not firing on all cylinders. You need something to, you know.
Cold dog. Oh, no thank you. Oh, two dogs. Okay.
Two dogs, one burger.
All right. All right. We know
burgers can be filling. Burgers are much more filling. You could throw a couple of dogs in there.
But two burgers and you're good. Two burgers and I'm ready to go.
I want to be nimble. You know, I want to be able, if somebody brings something good for dessert that I was not expecting, I want to be able to pivot on a dime.
That is fair. You are right about that. The burger, you get two and you're kind of, it's curtains for the rest of the day. That I would agree with. When we return, speaking of July 4th. Four best things about July 4th, and it's not all sunshine and roses. There's one terrible thing that happens on this day every single year. We'll tell you about after we get this latest sports update from Gordon Damer.
You're listening to Writer Than You.
Outside of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, I'm convinced you can take Ryan Hickey, who plays hand volleyball, but outside of that isn't exactly an NFL specimen. And you're the most athletic guy on the show. No, don't show your muscles, because there's not a lot there. And I speak as a guy who knows.
It's Writer Than You with Bill Writer.
Welcome back into Writer Than You. It is Ryan Hickey in for Bill right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Thank you for making us part of your holiday. Very happy July 4th to everyone out there listening. A lot of choices here. I'm sure very busy on this holiday Friday and three-day weekend. Thank you for spending some time with us right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Bill is back Monday. If you missed anything from today's show, from yesterday's show, if you're traveling on vacation next week but don't want to miss the show but can't maybe listen live, easiest way if you're already unaware of how to stay up to date with everything going on with the show, simply subscribe to the Writer Than You podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. It's free, so it allows you to make sure you're always staying up to date and do not miss anything that's going on with this show. Because it's the holiday, and I do want to just, you know, show it some respect, quickly here, I want to give you a countdown. The four best things about July 4th. Let's start here at number four.
Number four.
Fireworks. I'm a sucker for them. I know Bill made fun of me earlier this week because I like halftime shows and he's seen fireworks a million times. Everyone has, right? But for me at least, July 4th is the only acceptable day of the year to light off fireworks. That's it. Outside, of course, like a team doing it, right? If you win a game or hit a walk-off or win the World Series or a championship, team-sanctioned fireworks are different. Otherwise, I think July 4th, only day where it makes sense. Not even New Year or, you know, another holiday. July 4th, that's it. So I enjoy them on this day. I enjoy seeing them all kind of all over the neighborhood. Now, please, don't be an idiot today, right? No heroes. Let the town handle the fireworks. We don't need a big fireworks display from your next-door neighbor, Joey. Don't go over there if he's inviting you over there. No one's got to see all these big time booming fireworks going off and having the possibility of them misfiring and you're right there 10 feet away in the direct line of fire. Be safe. But when you do appreciate them safely, there's still something nice about fireworks here on July 4th. That's the fourth best thing about this great holiday, July 4th.
Number three.
American flag themed clothing. This the best color scheme we have on this planet. Not just this country, this planet. Red, white, and blue. I'm a big believer. If you don't look good, you can't feel good. If you can't feel good, you can't play good or work good, whatever it may be. However that translates to your life. And I don't think you can look bad in anything wearing red, white, and blue. We won the lottery. It comes of all the countries, all the flags, all the color schemes you could have chosen. We right here in the good old US of A got the three best colors that I think go perfectly together. Red, white, blue. And when it comes to right wearing fashionable clothing with a flag on it, name me a country that has better fashion with their country's flag on it than right now the US. You can't. I'll save you time. Third best thing about July 4th, the color scheme, second to none.
Number two.
July 4th, I think, second best thing about July 4th, is that it officially starts the ability to mail it in at work for the next 2 months. Right? Memorial Day, at least I subscribe to this, Memorial Day weekend is the start of summer. Summer goes from Memorial Day weekend to Labor Day weekend. And like, even though, in my mind, summer starts in that last weekend in May, right? June usually still, if you have kids, they're in school, people are still buttoned up. You don't kind of have that carefree go about feeling until really this weekend. Now this weekend really hijacks the let's push it back to next week. Let's try to kill the clock as much as we can. Let's put off work as far as possible so we can get out early. So we can go to the beach this weekend. So we can, you know, go hang with our friends or go on vacation, right? These next 2 months between now and Labor Day weekend, I think it's universally accepted to do as little work as possible. Try to get away with it as much as you can. Use all those vacation times, use all the vacation days, and prioritize vacation and hangouts over work. But I think it's accepted. I've never been a boss, but I would assume if I was a boss, I would basically, okay, mark off July 4th to Labor Day weekend. We're not gonna be very productive. And you know what? That's okay. Summer to me is half about the weather, half about the mindset. There, everyone's in better spirits, more carefree, loosey-goosey, willing to have some fun. Everyone's in a better mood in summertime. And I think that starts, well, summer starts Memorial Day weekend. That attitude really starts July 4th weekend. Second best thing about this weekend, let's get to the best.
Number one.
The best thing about July 4th. This for me is it. One of the greatest internet memes we've ever had. Let me set the stage here first in case you don't know what I'm about to talk about. The Back It Up Terry is the It is in the Internet Hall of Fame of greatest videos ever created. And there's a lot out there, right? There's a lot of funny videos. But July 4th, every single year, gives the excuse. And what it is you're going to hear the audio, but you can't hear the video. To set the scene here, it's in a random street somewhere in this beautiful country. You have a friend and Terry. Terry is in a wheelchair, motorized wheelchair. They are lighting off a box of fireworks in the middle of the street. And what you're about to hear is a friend looking out for Terry, but in the process of doing so, I think creating one of the greatest videos, most memorable videos the internet has ever seen.
Bag up, bag up, bag up, Terry. Put it in reverse, Terry. Put it in reverse. Oh, Lord. Lord, Jesus. Oh, Lord. Oh, Jesus. What you doing, Terry?
Even just listening to it, now watching it, brings me so much joy. If you have not watched it before, simply, whenever you get a moment, just do this to yourself and you're not going to regret it. Go to YouTube, type in Back Up Terry. That's all you need to search. It's clean. Don't worry. You heard it. There's no curses. It's family friendly. It is hilarious. It is Terry as the fireworks are going off. The motorized part of the wheelchair ain't moving. So these fireworks are going off and Terry's right there, inches away, shoo, 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 as his good friend is not doing anything but just filming. Terry getting stuck right near the fireworks. Thankfully, didn't get hit by them, but hilarious. Bag up, Terry, bag up. It truly, like, it's one of those that lives, It will live forever. I'm 31 years old. So I've kind of really grown up with the internet taking off and social media really now coming into existence. There are plenty of fads or plenty of videos, right, that go viral and for a week, 2 weeks, for a month, it's all everyone talked about. Remember Hawk Tua Girl, right? That video was replayed and I'm sure talked about and shared at family events and friend circles for weeks. But now, like, that video I think is a year old. No one plays anymore. Like, okay, we got our fix of Hawk Tua Girl. But this back up Terry video, I've seen so many tweets like Happy July 4th and also Terry back it up already. This is one of those where every single year, doesn't matter how many times it's played, how many times your friends talk about it, it will be replayed on and on. I'll probably tell my kids about this video, my grandkids about this video. It is hilarious. And that's one of the best things about July 4th. It allows us to bring that up every single year. So with that said, no matter how you want to celebrate your July 4th and holiday weekend, do it safely, enjoy, get outside. It's been crappy here in the Northeast. So hopefully if you are not a Northeast liver, dweller is probably the better way to say it. It's been better by you, so it's not like the first weekend that truly is nice, but for a lot of us here in the Northeast, it is. Get out and enjoy it. Nature's calling, baby. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Bill will be back on Monday with you here. And I'm actually off the next few days. I'll be back on Thursday. So Bill and I together again on Thursday. Bill, though, back on Monday. A big thank you to Evan Harkin. Did an outstanding job today producing this show. And again, if you missed any part of the show so far, Writer Than You podcast, writer spelled R-E-I-T-E-R, available wherever you do get your podcasts. That's how you can stay up to date with everything going on with Bill's show moving forward. Again, thank you for spending some time with us right here on this July 4th. Really do appreciate it with all your choices out there. Thank you for making us part of your day. Enjoy it. Stay safe. Don't go anywhere on most of these stations. Brian Weber in for Rich Eisen coming up next. This has been Ryan Hickey in for Bill, wishing you a very happy and safe July 4th and a very happy and safe holiday weekend.